Hi, everybody. It's Dolores Catania from The Real Housewives of New Jersey, and you're listening to Rundown Media.
Are you a RuPaul's Drag Race fan? Then make sure you're subscribed to the Reality Rundown's official Drag Race podcast, The Tuck. Every week, our hosts recap the latest episodes of Drag Race, from the drama in the workroom to the fashions on the runway. We discuss it all. So make sure to subscribe to our podcast everywhere you listen to your podcast, and don't miss out on new weekly episodes. Get into it, sisters. Black and queer advocate, organizer, and writer, cast member of Summer House, Martha's Vineyard, Preston Mitchum, welcome to Reality Right After. How are you?
I am so good. How are you doing?
I'm so good to be here with you today. I've been trying to have this conversation since the show aired because finally we have representation on our screens in a different way. And for me, like, you represent so much. So thank you so much for coming on our show.
That means a lot. Thank you.
Of course, of course. How are you? How is life treating you today?
You know, it's a very dreary day. I'm in New York City, actually, for the weekend. I don't know what
some of the people did.
Happy Pride. Right, exactly. I was like, I don't know. You know, our Pride in D.C. was beautiful weather a couple weeks ago. But no, I am good. I'm good. You know, I'm still a little tired, but it's going to be a great weekend.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's going to rain on us, you know, so whatever.
It you is. Gotta take you know, we've danced in the rain before, so.
Listen, we're used to it. Exactly. So you're from Youngstown, Ohio, right?
Yes, uh-huh.
Talk to me about your experience growing up.
Ooh, Youngstown was a very interesting experience. So I always say my hometown is actually Dayton, Ohio, but my birthplace is Youngstown.
Okay.
Because I just had more formative experiences during my formative years when I was in Dayton, Ohio. But Youngstown, you know, I grew up around a lot of factory workers, a lot of steel workers, really grew up in the hood, honestly, in the height of the mob era in Youngstown, Ohio. There was just a lot of political corruption, outsourcing of jobs and labor. Many people, frankly, did not have solid employment. And then sometimes that meant they took other opportunities, which usually led to the underground economy. Right. And so, you know, for me, it was a very, like, interesting experience growing up, not recognizing, or at least not tapping into my queerness fully, but also recognizing the strength and the rigor from and on behalf of people in the Midwest. Right. I'll be honest, I have never seen people work harder than folks in the Midwest. And this is why I always encourage folks to really go to the Midwest if they have not, to really spend some time there, because the folks are different. Right. The folks are different.
It's a different side of the country.
Yeah, honestly, they're probably the most unique and authentic people that I've had the blessing to interact with. Like, you, what you see is truly what you get.
Right.
And that's just what I've taken upon myself, like, throughout my entire life.
Right, right. So our team did some research, and you credit your mother for teaching the importance of seeking the truth and never believing anything without research. Mm-hmm. Growing up as a Black gay boy, how do you use that, you know, how did that help you?
I would say it hurt me probably more than it helped me. I mean, I come from the era of really children should be seen but not heard.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too. So I have Caribbean parents.
Yeah.
And
yeah. Yeah. It's always interesting to me, though, whenever I even reflect on some of my upbringing, because a lot of times these were some of the same folks who all in love in the world, right? I think they raised me the best way they knew how, for sure.
Right, right.
But a lot of it was absolutely like this idea that, you know, don't believe whatever you hear, research it, double check it. But as you were actually challenging that, they're also some of the same ones telling you to be quiet.
Right.
Challenging things too much.
Right, right,
so
right.
It's very fascinating, kind of have like those that juxtaposition of like really challenging everyone but the ones who tell you to challenge.
Right.
And so I would say it actually hurt me more than helped me when I was younger. I think the older I got, I realized just how much of a blessing and a skill set that actually is.
Mm-hmm.
Respectfully, there are so many people online who I see some of the things they tweet, and I'm like, what the hell are you talking about?
Right.
like, it is obvious that you just did some random YouTube video searches and, you know, went down whatever the rabbit hole that is.
Or just copy and pasted something else that you saw on Twitter without fact checking.
Correct. And I'm like, okay, let's actually control alt delete that.
Right.
whatever you just figured out. Forget that you figured that out.
Right.
But I did realize the more I read, the more I researched, the more I started to challenge things critically, you know, it was met with beauty and hate, actually, from some folks, right? Because some folks want you to just accept whatever you hear.
Yeah, and not challenge.
Yeah, like it's such a beautiful, blissful moment to just be able to believe things. Like so often I would hear people tell me like, oh, I know it must be a beautiful thing. Like your brain is beautiful. And I'm like, yeah, sometimes, right? Sometimes it's actually frustrating though to just know that you want to just hear it, right? And be like, something don't sound right about that.
Something
doesn't make sense about what you just said. It actually sometimes is a pain.
It truly is, because you know what, not to cut you off, I have the same experience as well, in the sense of like, if something is not right to me, it's so hard for me to like move past it, especially when it's something like so like systematically wrong, you know, like it's, I totally get
you become
that.
The party pooper.
I can't move forward. Correct. I rock. Like I have to check this.
Yeah. It's like, you just said something horribly offensive. I'm sorry. Right. I need to stop this moment and course correct.
Yeah, I agree. So education is something that is so big to, you know, Black people, people of color in general. Mm-hmm. I mean, growing up, that's something that is instilled in us, you know, from the beginning. So Kent State University, Bachelor's of Arts in Political Science, concentration in public policy, North Carolina Central University School of Law, jurisprudence, doctorate, American University, Washington College of Law, Master's of Law degree in law and government, concentration in constitutional law and civil rights, specialization in gender and law. Clearly, you are Michelle Obama's dream. Let me just say
that. It's a mouthful, right?
No, but I when I saw this, I said, no, we have to name everything and every concentration, because this is everything. Clearly, education is something that's really important to you. Mm-hmm. Speak on the value of education and what it means to you and to our community.
Yeah, I don't think I ever envisioned my life, like the older I became, without education.
Right.
It's interesting, right? Because I don't come from a family with many people going to college, right? Actually, I think it was really pretty much only me and my older sister. Mm-hmm. And I always have to give blessings to my grandmother before she passed, because she actually got her associate's degree a couple of years before she passed away. And for her, that was really just because she wanted to set this model for a lot of her grandchildren.
That's awesome.
Get growing up. I could talk about my grandma forever, because she used to be a crew singer. Like she,
oh wow,
my grandma's had a life. You know,
we might have to do a deep dive.
Yeah, but I've always been a nerd. I've always been the person who wanted to do the extra research. I know some of my classmates, we joke about it often, because I'm really close actually with a lot of my high school classmates still. Mm-hmm. And we would joke about it often when everyone would be late on the assignment. They're like, I'm sure Preston isn't late though. And I'm like, sure not. I sure am not. But it was always a thing that I loved. I loved school. I truly did. It was such a weird thing, because I don't think many people admit that. Maybe now they do. But I always loved school, even in the moment. And I couldn't imagine me doing anything else but going to college. Law school was always there as a dream, but I didn't quite know, because I always toyed with either journalism or law school. Mm-hmm. I just happened to rest on law school for a variety of reasons. But I really loved education. To me, there's something that's so unique of sitting in a classroom with people who are kind of figuring life out the same way that you are, who you have different upbringings with. Kent State, thankfully for me, was more of a progressive school. So most of my peers in class weren't like outwardly saying the most vitriolic and racist things. I mean, sometimes, because progressives are that way sometimes too, if we're being honest. But I didn't have to wrestle with some of the things that I knew a lot of my colleagues were wrestling with at the time. But I think education to me was absolutely the thing that set me on my trajectory to figure out, frankly, things like whether reality TV made sense, right? Like, I don't know if I would have been able to do that the same way if I wasn't the age I am now, and without me figuring out what contracts look like, how to actually negotiate a contract,
right.
To talk to about these things, and really like accountability, right? Like education really taught me around tools and mechanisms of accountability, whatever that looks like within like law school or even in college for that matter. And being in an education setting taught me a lot around my own political beliefs.
Yeah.
You know, I of course came to college with my own thoughts and feelings around like politics, capital P and lowercase p. But I think law school or college is really what actually developed my more radical thinking around like belief systems and structures and Blackness and queerness.
Same.
And really wanting to be surrounded with Black folks and what that actually meant,
yeah.
right? And this was still at like a 90% white school. But I think at that time, like, I was like, this is the idea that I have for myself. This is the people I feel most comfortable around.
Mm-hmm.
These are the communities that I see myself building with. And I wanted to be unapologetic about that. And I was able to get that experience because of education, frankly.
Right, right.
And that's a privilege. I want to say, and that's a privilege.
That's a real privilege because, you know, I come from the Caribbean and I'm an immigrant. And being first generation, you see that right away, how a privilege it is to just be in a place where you can expand your mind past the, you know, the limits that the people before you came. So absolutely. I definitely agree. It's such a privilege. So let's talk a little bit about, I wanted to say this before we move on. You said that education has shaped a lot of you, but I also feel like even when it came to your actions in the show, mm-hmm. I feel like education had to play into that because the way that you moved conversations and the way that you, like, that awareness to be on a reality show and know that we're filming something that's for entertainment, but also whatever I'm saying on this camera is going to reach so many people and my impact is important.
It's a platform. And I think this is a statement about myself more than it is, frankly, about anyone else. I will say that when I decided to do this, when I decided, you know, when they were like, you made it, right? What are you going to do? I was like, I can only feel comfortable doing this if I'm able to show up as my full self.
Right.
The Black radical, loving to drink and have a good time, sometimes argumentative, but rational
right.
like person in spaces. Like, if I'm able to show up as that person, I'm okay with doing it. Right now, granted, things shift and change. It's a pressure cooker. You're put in many different situations and environments.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the only thing that made sense for me to still tap into who I actually am.
Right.
Now, obviously, sometimes I can make for good TV. Sometimes it may not, right? Like, I've been accused of being, like, obviously the fan favorite, but I've also been accused of being the boring one, right? Because there are so many dynamics that you can't see because of, like, we all know editing plays a part
in it. Of course, of course. There's only a certain amount of hours to edit into this episode.
And it's also like, well, if your definition of boring is someone who is going to be
an exactly
and not causing drama and chaos, sign me up. Sign me up for that boredom because I'm happy to be that person and carry that mantle.
Right, right. No, I agree with you. And there's good reality TV is, and especially when we're talking about an ensemble cast, it's mm-hmm. we need a variation of, you know, characters. Everybody mm-hmm. cannot be alpha and everybody cannot be, you know.
Correct.
There has to be a level where everybody's carrying different weights in the show.
Correct.
So a little bit more about your personal life, because a lot of the questions when we were talking to some of our viewers and on Instagram at therealityrundown.com, a lot of our listeners wanted to know more about your personal life because they mm-hmm. felt like we saw your cast members, a lot of their personal life when it came to, you know, at least the ones that were married and
right.
some of the ones that were single, but, you know, were able to, like, bring people in at the end. But mm-hmm. we didn't get to see a lot of your personal life. So you publicly came out by posting on Facebook, and I quote, "I can no longer stay silent, friends. I am gay. I have been for a lifetime. I recognize that this may be a shock to some of you, but I would be remiss to only share half of me." That spoke to me, by the way. Mm-hmm. What made you post this? Did you think about it before you posted it? Or was it something that, like, because I know when my coming out, it was a lot of urge. So I'm like, was this something that you thought about? Or was it something like, I've had enough, it's going up?
Well, I actually have a story about this too. So it was, I can't remember the exact year because you come out so many times, honestly, in a lifetime.
Right.
I want to say it was like 2007, 2008, probably 2007. But the only reason I remember the connection to this around this time period is because at Kent State University, I was on homecoming court.
Mm-hmm.
And this was like around the same time as like National Coming Out Week/Day. And we were literally getting ready to walk down the field during halftime. And my mother had called me. And I had, right before this was at a time where Facebook was like, it would sometimes have pre-populated statuses. So you could say, you know, it's National Coming Out Day and I'm coming out as an ally, as a friend, as, you know, blank, right? You leave it however. They probably don't need to bring that back ever, actually. But nonetheless, that's what it started as. And I can't remember what I said, but it was clearly me implying that I was gay.
Right.
And my mom saw it. She's on Lord. Facebook, on Facebook for forever. So she sees it and she calls me. And I'm picking up the phone. I'm like, hey, Ma, I'm literally about to walk down this court. Like, I can't talk right now. Right. So she was like, oh, okay, good luck, good luck. So I walked down the court. They announced me as homecoming king. And we walk off after some celebration. I then call my mom back. And I'm like, hey, I won. So we're joking and laughing. And she was like, hey, I really want you to have a good time tonight. But also, I saw your Facebook. So whatever you want to tell me, just know that I'm open to hearing it.
Wow.
And I think that was like enough of, you know, sometimes depending on your relationship with your family, it's like, if I got this person's support, F all of y'all.
F everything.
Like, I don't care about what the rest of y'all say or think, because this person has my back and this was the person who I was worried about the most. Mm-hmm. So I think that actually gave me the courage and really allowed me to be vulnerable enough to just share more about myself. And that actually, like, around that same time period, maybe even the next day, is when I went to Facebook and wrote this like public status about it. And it was a very interesting experience, right? I think there are many people who kind of guessed or thought, or, you know, people are always invested in guessing other people's sexuality. So there are people who, I'm sure, but they never made it a big deal. Over the years, it made me lose some friendships or this relationships that frankly probably were not friendships, or that probably needed to be done. But I will say, like, that was that time. And so I don't think I thought about it as much as it kind of just was divine timing. Like, kind of just happened because this one person made it clear that she did not care and just wanted me to just share with her whenever I was ready to share with her.
So I actually have, before asking this question, now I want some advice, because I feel like, you know, you know. So what if, let's say, this is my current situation, right? Mm-hmm. So like, my parents have come around and have accepted my gayness and everything. But specifically my mother, she still struggles with family knowing about it, or you know, like, and just like you said, if this, where I'm at, like, in the sense of like, y'all know and y'all are cool with it, so like, I don't really care what the rest of the family has to say, because you guys know my truth and you guys are okay with it. So what would you be, what your advice would be for someone in that situation where like their parents are cool with it, but then their parents are still having issues with the rest of the family, you know, knowing about it?
This is interesting. I was just on a call this morning about something similar, right, around like even someone dating someone who their family may not know about it, but their friends know about it. And what, because that's kind of like partial in, partial out, right? It's like a very interesting like version of like outness. You know, for me, I'm always reflective of or thinking about, what does it mean for someone to actually be out or invite people into their life? Because sometimes people don't care if other folks know, right? So for example, like if I'm okay with my parents knowing and then my parents are not okay with family members knowing, it's like, what is the investment of that relationship? Do I need for the other people in the family to know if I don't really consistently stay in touch with them? Sometimes you do just want to just share, right? And that should be okay as well.
Or not even feeling to hide, you know?
Correct. Because those are not the same thing inherently. So absolutely. I mean, I think some of it for me, but you know, it's interesting, right? Because I don't know how you feel about this. Mm-hmm. For me, when I told my mom, I was like, I don't care if other people know or don't know, but I'm not going to hide who I am.
That's exactly right? Where like, I'm at. Gonna,
like, you can decide to not tell them.
Right.
Well, if I'm around them, just know it may, my wrist may be a little bit more bent than you used to. Right. Like, it may just happen. But I realize, honestly, it is not your battle to solve for, right? Or your burden to bear. And that's the thing I'm realizing more and more, is I oftentimes start to question, what is it that will make you feel away if other members in the family know? If you have allegedly accepted me, then I think it is your responsibility, especially as my parent, to protect me in those spaces if you feel like someone is going to say something anti-me.
Right.
Right. Like, it is not about protecting you. It is not about protecting, like, the legacy of family. It is about me.
Right.
Right. Like, and yeah, sometimes you have to show grace to people who, quite frankly, you know, had different versions of what they thought you were going to be and who they thought you were going to be. It's healthy tension sometimes. And I think it's difficult, right? Because it becomes exhausting for us as individuals to hide who we are.
Yeah.
While a lot of our family members may feign that they actually care about us, but it's actually not about us at all. It's about them. You know, I've had to wrestle with, like, is it really my burden to bear your embarrassment? It's not. It's not. And sometimes that shifts depending on culture and families, because frankly, there are cultural dynamics that are very different depending on the setting. But for me, I was just like, I'm sorry, I'm not about to be silent just because you are afraid to have a conversation with your family.
Right. And that's where I'm moving more towards. But it's still a lot of courage to build, you know?
It's a lot of courage to build, and it's important to have safety nets in place, right? Particularly depending on age, depending on location, right? Yeah. Like, I would never, this is why I've always had an issue with people who push the idea of coming out or inviting folks in.
Because you never know someone's situation.
Correct. Not everyone has the ability or safety or freedom to be able to fully be themselves. It's literally not possible for many people. And some people, when they do, they experience violence, right? So it's like, what's actually more important for some people? I think safety is always going to be predominant.
So... you have to come back and we're going to do something like about gayness and Black gayness, and like specifically just about that, because it's such a big conversation, such an important conversation. And I just have so many ideas and so many other conversations.
I'll tell you this. I wrote an article about this for The Atlantic 10 years ago. And it's actually weird saying 10 years out loud that I wrote this article, but it was literally called On National Coming Out Day, Don't Disparage the Closet. And it really was a personal critique of mine on National Coming Out Day, because there was like such this hyper focus on like the outness, which to me is like other people's shit, excuse my language, but it's like their thing. But most people, they're not focused on queer people's and trans people's safety
at all.
Right. So it's like, if we're focusing so much on this external practice of you being out, what happens when I can't be out?
Right.
Like, what are you going to provide safety there? Right. For some people, things don't just get better. Right. And so, you know, and I hate, people just hate admitting that, but I'm like, that is the reality for many people in a global context of being queer and trans. Like, it does not get better for a lot of people.
For a lot of people.
That may make you uncomfortable, but that doesn't make it not true. And so sometimes people with like relative privilege and power and access, they want to hide this honest conversation about some people just not being able to navigate in that way. And so there's this hyper focus and sometimes privilege to being out. And there are other people who don't get to experience that at all.
At all. And I agree with you at all, with everything you just said. You and your boyfriend celebrated 2 years together in November of 2022. For all of our listeners that want to know more about your personal life, talk to us a little bit about your relationship. And will we be seeing more of your relationship in the future if Summer House Martha's Vineyard comes back for a second season?
Well, first of all, make sure y'all call and hashtag and tweet Bravo, right?
Yes, Bravo, like do all of that. Do all of that because we want it back.
Yeah, yeah. You know, so we really do want multiple seasons. I mean, this was really... It depends on who you ask, obviously, but I will say it was
I mean
it depends on the cast who you ask.
Oh, okay. I'm like, this is not a discussion. It was one of the best seasons of reality TV in a while.
I mean, we get honestly, so last night I went out to Trappy Hour in Harlem.
Oh my god, you were there?
When I tell you though how many times I was stopped by people, it was like, and it's still these moments where I know my friends probably get frustrated by it, right? Because you know that we don't know a life with this, right? To a degree. I mean, I was always very active in DC, but I think it's different, right? And you know, for me, I have to focus on the present, because it's like these are people who are giving me the platform and opportunity, and it relates and resonates with them. And I have to be very intentional about curating those relationships to talk to people who are seeing this, right? Even when I may not want to all the time, right? Because they are taking, it is a thing to really take the time out to come to someone and say, hey, thank you. I'm going to joke a little bit about you know, your cast, et cetera. And I, you know, but it's real. It's real, because like, if you are nasty to people, well, good luck for a season two.
No one's going to want to talk to you.
So, you know, but all that to say, like, I, every day I'm humbled and by people's comments, because even, we get it all the time. Like, this is one of the best shows on Bravo we've seen in forever. And I'm actually just blown away every time I hear it.
Yeah.
So my partner and I've been together for about 2.5 years. And I will say some viewers were disappointed, obviously, with like how late he was introduced. And, you know, just this idea of like not really knowing much about me, because, you know, the honest feedback that people have given online especially is that, you know, sometimes if you're the only person and then it seems like you are, your even your personal life is not being shown at all, it does sometimes look like a side character.
Yeah.
Right. At the same time, right, we have so many people. Mm-hmm. It's hard to really tell all of our stories in one season, which is why you do want multiple seasons, right? So you can flesh out people's characters. Like, that's just how character development works.
That's how TV works.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, but I will say also, right, like the reality is he works in big law. So, right, like our time is not the same all the time. He's working often. So, you know, that is also like an additional layer of just like timing, right? And what timing looks like in vacations, et cetera. But yeah, no, I am glad that we definitely get a chance to at least our FaceTime call.
Yeah, when I saw it, I was like, ah, oh, amazing. And I watched the finale already, but I was like, ah, oh, everything about the finale, it was so amazing that it came out the way it did. And, you know, we don't get to see many queer people cast as, like you said, main cast members. They typically end up being a friend of or like a side character. We've seen this, you know, in so many other friends of that came in through The Real Housewives and through all of the other shows. For queer people, if it's not Drag Race, it's really hard to find something of reality TV that represents us and represents Black queerness at that.
Yeah, so, and that doesn't also feel like a caricature, right?
Right.
Like, I can't lie to you. I saw comments that were, mostly because people tagged me in them, but they were just like, "Ooh, I was so afraid that the person on the other end of that phone wasn't going to be Black," right? Because the reality is also that when we do see, like, TV representations of Black queer men, we're usually dating white queer men, right? Political discussion for another day, but it is.
I knew it was, but
I'm like, anyone who knows my politics and belief,
right? I'm like, I just knew it wasn't going to be. So I don't know what show were you watching?
but I think for some people it was like a trauma response. Like, I don't even use that big term in this instance, but I think people are like, oh Lord, you know, when you make it, this is what happens when people make it.
Yeah,
and I can't disagree. Sure. That's people's reality, and that's what we oftentimes see. But to me, there is minimal representations of Black queer men generally, Black queer people, but especially Black queer men dating Black queer men. That is something we usually do not see in that way.
I agree. We know that you set the tone in episode one about Black excellence and what that looks like. And there has been a lot of conversations around this show being reflective of Black excellence and the Jack and Jill kids and not really inclusive of the more of the urban young professionals. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that? You clearly just kind of spoke about it, but what are your thoughts on that and the representation and in the spectrum of Blackness? Mm-hmm. Especially because we're gonna touch in a little bit later when we talk about Summer House, like the actual things that happened in the season, but Mariah's and Phil's departure, which I feel were the representation to that other side of Blackness.
For sure.
So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So first of all, you saw the finale. So it's like funny actually, like to end with my sarcasm of Black excellence in the finale. But I will say this, right? That conversation actually was interesting on social media because, listen, I've thought a long time about what I believe in. So I'm like, you don't have to agree with me. Just know I am not changing my thoughts about certain things. Like,
and that's fine.
Like, I fully understand my family and how I grew up and what I've seen to be versions of excellence. And the reality is, this is why I challenge people. Like, I want people to do homework sometimes, right? Like, if people just actually happen to look at the hashtag Black excellence, right? Look at it on Instagram and on Twitter, I guarantee you the people, 95% of it are people who have wealth, have discovered something, have accolades like gold medals or breaking records.
Degrees.
I mean, things that are clearly like quintessentially rooted in capitalism, but also versions of success that we know them to be, right?
And privilege,
right? And relative privilege and access and resources. And I just became uncomfortable with how much there was a disconnect, because that's not the vast majority of Black people.
Exactly.
It's not the vast majority of people, to be clear, actually.
In general.
But especially not Black folks. And I started to really think, like, what are we saying to the everyday average person who do not have this ability or chance? What are we saying to my mamas of the world and my daddies of the world, my aunts and aunts? Like, what are we saying?
Right.
Like, are they not excellent? Do they not matter?
Or that was so important.
Whatever,
because
right. Yeah. And if, and I'll be, and I'm going to just say something that may be harsh, but just real. The white supremacy dictates that white folks can be mediocre, and that is just okay. But Black mediocrity is suddenly like something to be disparaged.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that became really uncomfortable, right? It also meant that we had these like extremely high expectations that most people can't meet, and that they burn out as a result of it, and at least there's so much exhaustion. Mm-hmm. And because I used to work a lot in suicide and suicide prevention, those factors lead to suicidal ideations and attempts, and unfortunately, sometimes completions of suicide. And so while people may think that one word or a phrase is so like minuscule or minute or means nothing, it really has an impact on how we navigate. And to me, that is what I wanted to really set the tone. Like, yes, Black excellence, we can say it all day, but what do you actually mean? Who are you actually including in this example of Black excellence? Mm-hmm. And why the hell are we saying it when we're just trying to drink liquor? Like, what are we doing?
Right. Well, listen, that was a perfect segue into like, fast round. We have like about 15, 20 minutes before you have to go, but fast round on some Summer House season 2 drama. We might get a little shady. Let me just tell you this now, but listen, we got to give the people what they want.
Open.
Did any of the cast feel bad for Mariah's situation? Looking back, did any of you guys feel bad for kicking Mariah out? And also, what was up with Phil? Did any of you stay in contact with him after this?
Yeah. So most of us felt bad. I mean, I think that's the reality. So the reality is, right, there's genuinely only so much that can be shown.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is that Mariah and I have a really good relationship and had a really good relationship. We've known each other for years. And even I recognized that Mariah wasn't showing up as her full self. Like, she just, she was going through a lot, right? A lot of personal things that I just will never divulge.
Right.
So part of it is, like, hindsight is 2020. The one thing that I absolutely wish we did was make sure she was present in the space to say her piece about everything.
Right.
I also, on the flip side, am like, you know, no matter how light a tap is, I don't think people should put their hands on people. Right.
Oh.
That's just how I feel.
Two things can be true.
Yeah, right, exactly. But looking back, should she have been kicked out? No, I don't think so. But I also believe, right, that there was just something happening there. I think what made it worse is the timing of her departure and Phil's departure, which were clearly diametrically opposite actions.
Yes.
Right. Phil, I'm okay with never talking to him again.
Okay.
That's just yeah.
Let's leave it at that, honestly. Can you express the dynamics and experience of being the only out and probably gay Black member of the Summer House?
Mm-hmm. I feel like there was some shade there with out and proud, but no.
wait, because my producers were so shady. No. They wanted me to ask you later, like, did you get any did you see anything? I'm like, well, I'm not asking him that.
The reality is, so I, you know what? Based
I'm
on
so happy you peeped that.
I read through lines. No, so I mean, it was an interesting experience. I mean, like, the reality is, I think some people deduce or reduce sexuality to sex, and the reality is, it is a whole culture. It is a whole community of people.
Thank you.
And so it's like, yeah, the experiences of queer bars and straight bars are vastly different, right? The experiences when you surround yourself with queer people and straight people are vastly different. And so, you know, it was difficult, honestly, in sometimes. Maybe not at first. At first, it was like, we're having a good time, it's vacation, etc. But I think when I realized that most people weren't checking on me personally, like saying, how are you?
Yeah.
Do you miss your home? Do you miss your partner? Do you miss your puppy? It was all those things that were just not going, people weren't addressing. Mm-hmm. With the exception likely of like Jordan and Amir, like they were more intentional about stuff like that. But like, honestly, it started to get isolating near the end because it's like, do y'all not understand that I am different than y'all, and it's not just about being gay. It's actually about a missing cultural dynamic. And I don't think many understood it, which is frankly part of the reason why I even threw the pride party in the first place.
And I'm glad you did that, because sometimes allyship can be so different to certain people, and they think not asking is like creating a safe space, but sometimes asking is also like goes such a long way.
Correct. It was Pride Party, honestly, was such an emotional time to watch it because, you know, you're in the moment. And I think sometimes, for me at least, it's really hard to, I've been challenging myself a lot more to focus on the moment, like just sit in the moment, which I'm still working on every day. But Pride Party was one of the times where everyone was on the same page, right? And there was no drama or arguments. I mean, I think, frankly, partially because people knew how much it meant to me. And because I really was the person in the house that tried to keep everything on one accord, even when I knew drama would occur because we're human. But that was the time where there was no conflict, like zero conflict. And it just felt good.
Right, right. So Amir seemed to be having his first Black experience on the show. You even taught him how to fry his own chicken. Do you see him having a desire to connect more with his Blackness after this experience?
I do. I do. I mean, it's interesting, right? Because I don't think I've ever lived in a city. Well, maybe that's not true. I don't think I've ever lived in a city where I couldn't find a group of Black folks to befriend.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's Amir's experience either. I mean, he lives in Austin. Austin is not 100% white, right? So there are clearly pockets of Black folks who live there. That's just not his reality. That's just not how he lived, how he grew up. And so I think, I mean, I still talk to Amir all the time, all the time. So I think, you know, the reality is he really has been branching out more. He's been trying to travel more to like bigger cities. And Amir's younger. And so you know, he told us, you know, he never had been to New York at that time until after we filmed.
Oh, wow.
And so I was like, wait, never? Right. Like, and so I had to realize like people have different experiences.
Yeah.
And he was very appreciative. He like soaked up everything.
Yeah, yeah.
He was so appreciative. And I think sometimes embarrassed that he hadn't watched certain Black films that we were all talking about, right? Or, you know, because I think in some respect, you will get judged for that, right? You know, there's a whole joke of having your Black car revoked, right? So I think in some ways he felt embarrassed by it, but really it made him want to tap so much more into learning more about his Black side.
Yeah, and it just, again, great representation because that is Black America. There's certain people that are not connected to what we feel Blackness is in this definition, and there is a space for them. Let's talk about your LB. And let me just say, I understand the entire thing because I'm also Greek and I also have Lion Brothers.
Yes.
But let's talk about your LB, which we know you love. And he seemed to come off a little bit controlling when it came to and critical of Jasmine. Do you think it was just early marital woes, or when you were in it presently, did you feel like it was something deeper?
Yeah. I mean, this is the thing I've shared with both of them, frankly. Like I try my hardest to be an honest person because I don't believe honesty needs to be brutal. And the reality is there were times where I sensed him being more controlling than I liked. Right. And there were certain dynamics that it wouldn't have worked for me.
Right.
It just wouldn't. Right. And it could be because of queer relationship dynamics. Right. I mean, but to be clear, there are also queer relationships dynamics that emulate and look like heterosexual relationships. But, you know, for me, it's like, I am not going to be expected to cook. I will not be expected to iron. Like, that's just not, it doesn't even make sense as adults for me. Like, it's like, you actually have two hands. You can cook, you can iron your clothes if you need to. Now, there's differences, right? If you're rushing, right, and your partner clearly has a little bit more time, hey, babe, can you help me out? Do X, Y, and Z. I think it was the expectation of it that made some viewers cringe a little bit. And I must be honest, I think at the same time, there are certain things you talk to your partner about and you sign up for. So I don't think it's a situation where someone is innocent and someone is guilty. I think it's a dynamic. What did you discuss with your partner? Does it work? What do you do when it no longer serves either of you or serves one of you? Right. And I think those are just adult conversations that all of us have to have if we're not navigating our relationships, because relationships are not easy
at all.
They shouldn't be chores, but they also aren't easy.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that, it was a clear miscommunication issue because Jasmine at the end of the show kept saying, like, I just can't wait to go back to New York and go back into our routine. And it seemed like Silas had a problem with stepping out of that routine and not understanding that we're on vacation and she doesn't have to wake up and cook breakfast for me, which was the vibe that Jasmine was on. So I feel like
I struggled with Jasmine there. I mean, I was actually a little shocked, frankly, as I think most of us were, that there was a single routine because we were on vacation.
Yeah.
Like, and it's like, I get it. You do. But again, those are conversations that I do think you would need to have. Like, what's the expectation of us here?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Do we need to fall into a routine? Can we actually get out of this routine?
Right. Right. Lewis from North Carolina wants to know, Preston, what was going through your mind during the fight between Bria and Summer, and who was more at fault? And do you feel like that Simon did anything wrong?
So let me take a piece at a time. So
what was going through your mind?
Summer is my girl.
Yeah.
Summer is my girl. One of the close people in the house. To me, Summer was wrong.
Yeah.
She was in the wrong. There was, to me, there was a boundary issue that she crossed. And I think Summer would even admit.
We saw it in the finale.
Correct. Right. Right. Like, I think she would even admit that strongly. Right. Mm-hmm. Bria has a way to push her buttons. Bria has a way to push buttons. And I do think, I don't think Simon was wrong. I mean, I think there's a piece there where I think Simon was trying to do a little too much. But it was all in fun. And I think was supposed to be lighter. She didn't take it lightly, which is her right to do as someone who is in the home. But I think he was more so frustrated with feeling disrespected. And I do think he had a right to feel disrespected, frankly.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you. You called this out on the show, but what do you think about how Bria was in every fight and didn't take accountability? When that side camera in the kitchen caught you saying that, and you said, "So you're not the denominator in any of this?" I said, "Please, someone call it out."
See, that's the thing. For me, I'm very much like, listen, you are rarely going to accuse me of talking behind your back, because I will, even if I was trying to do that, I will absolutely say it to you.
You were made for reality TV because you're so genuine that there's no way to take what you're saying, even if it's something that you don't want to hear, in a negative way, because you come off so genuine and so like present and intentional that even if it's something I'm not trying to hear, or you're calling me out or checking me, it's like I have to take it in because you're pressing.
Thank you, because I'd be so concerned with folks. What is missing in this? Like, do you not notice any of this right now?
Right.
But Bria, you know, another, I mean, honestly, I get along with everyone on the show.
Of course.
You know, there are certain relationships dynamics that are stronger than others. Mm-hmm. But Bria was one of the people who I had to kind of sit with, because I'm like, even the things that I don't think you actually may be wrong about, you were in the middle of.
Oh.
I'm like, why are you in the middle of all of
things? Why did you say you were going to go check on Simon and you went and sat down with Nick's girlfriend? Right. Like, Bria.
Yeah. It's just like, you know, Bria. But, you know, that's Bria. Listen, Bria.
I love her. I love reality TV gold down boots house. Everything.
Listen, I love Bria. Like, and the one thing, one reason I really love Bria is because truly what you see is what you get.
Yeah.
Bria's not, if you meet Bria, she's not going to be different than what you see. Like, and I just think there is a lovable characteristic to Bria,
of course, that
I think actually makes her really human.
Yeah, no, I agree. Ariana from DC wants to know, Preston, who should be the host of the next trip and what should be done differently? Also, part B of this question, would you be open to a winter house, Martin's Vineyard?
Yeah, I can't lie. I would love a winter house. Like, I genuinely would. And I think it'll be interesting to see, especially for people who are just like, oh, the Black Radical being a mostly white cast. Like, you know, it'll be college times again with a little bit more maturity.
Right.
But you know what? So I'm wrestling between a couple things, right? I was making this joke yesterday and I was like, you know what? I would love to be the host, but I have no time for people to treat me like Marlo on Atlanta, because people beg for certain people who they like as like guests of and friends of to be hosts and get their peach. And when they get their peach, you're like, get them out of here.
Right.
You don't like them anymore. And I'm like, so y'all better give me grace.
Right. You're like, let me not overplay my card before these people shoot me out.
Look, exactly. Look, fan favorite one season or hate it the next. So I'm like,
no, Lord. Not even one season the next, one episode the next.
Exactly.
Let's be honest.
But I think, but honestly, I would love no host, if I'm being honest. Like, if I think there, it's like, that's our season one, it made sense, right? Mm-hmm. There is a nature of why we're all convening and getting together, right. We're celebrating our friend's marriage or wedding/marriage. I think now it's like we, you know, our bond is so, I shouldn't say inextricable, but it is tight.
Yeah.
And so I think it can make sense, honestly, for there to be none. But I would be open for sure.
Right, right. Is there a scene you wish had aired or did air but wanted to see more of?
Baby, yes. Our 70s night party.
Oh, yeah.
Our 70s night party. I'm telling you, I had a whole Rick James performance.
Oh, my God.
Yes. Like, all the cast was like, if we had a contest, you absolutely would have won because you ate us up tonight. Like, that was the part where it was like, we had so much fun. Mm-hmm. That is one moment that I definitely wish made air.
Wow, wow. I mean, from your explanation, I wish that I would have seen it too. Mercy from Atlanta wants to know, now that we know Preston Mincham is the star that we've always known him to be, what's next for you?
Oh my God. Honestly, I really have been loving the creative and TV space. It's, you know, I don't want to get sappy, but I will just say that it was not what I was ever expecting. Mm-hmm. And now that it's here, I love it. And I think I have to stay grounded for sure in it. Mm-hmm. Because every moment will not be beautiful. Every moment will not be amazing. Everyone will not be saying I'm fan favorite forever. Maybe they will. But, you know, I'm trying to always remember that even during the bad times, mm-hmm. frankly, like, there's always moments for rebuilding, right? And everything does not have to be one level or one line.
Right. Right.
What's really next? I have, you know, I own and I'm CEO of a consulting company, PDM Consulting LLC, mm-hmm. really fleshing out that with my clients and doing a lot of brand engagements. But I would really love like brand engagements, honestly, and brand sponsors, sponsored deals. So if there are any beer companies out there, any skin companies out there, like I think I have beautiful both, they can be better. That is what I'm really tapping into a lot more of as well. Also, you know, starting writing my book.
Yeah.
That is the thing that has been a long time coming. And so I really want viewers and fans to hold me accountable to that as well.
No, for sure. And honestly, listen, I want you to have it all and for other brands to come your way. Tell our listeners, our viewers, where they can find you, all of the things that you have going on and everything, like all the plug it up.
Absolutely. So you can definitely find me on Instagram at Preston.Mitchum or on Twitter at Preston Mitchum, all one word. My website is PrestonMitchum.com. I have my consulting page also on there, including clients I've worked with, services I offer, among other things. And also, if you see me on the street, don't apologize. Just come up to me and say uh-huh. hi. Wellington, I'll tell you, that was always the interesting thing, though, too. People always apologize uh-huh. for stopping you. Yeah. And I just am like, oh, my gosh, I hate it. Because I'm like, don't, please. Because if I saw people on reality TV show, I mean, I think you can have different reactions. But there are some people I'm like, maybe, because they may seem too busy. Mm-hmm. But there are other times where it's like, I'm in a club.
Right.
I'm just drinking. Like, let's just talk and have a good time. But it's been such a blessing to
we need to go out together because we have to do it. Thank you so much for being here today, Preston. And hopefully we can do it in person the next time and talk more about all of the things that we started talking about today. Again, to all of our listeners, make sure that you are tuning in to the finale of, well, by the time this airs, the finale is gonna be out. So make sure that you watched it. Yeah. If you haven't, go on Peacock and make sure that you watch the replay. Thank you, Preston, for being here today. Guys, make sure you go follow Preston, follow the entire cast. Thank you so much for giving us this show, signing on and being so intentional with the way that you showcase yourself. It was truly an amazing thing to do. Thank you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Of course. Flipping the Table is hosted and executive produced by me, Wellington Gomez, co-hosted by TRR correspondent Kay King, audio and engineering by me, Wellington Gomez, production management by Dayanara Rodriguez. Flipping the Table is a production of The Reality Rundown and Rundown Media. For more podcasts like this one, search for the Rundown Media Podcast Network everywhere you listen to your podcast. Make sure to follow Flipping the Table on Instagram at Flipping the Table Pod. And if you are a fan of reality TV, make sure you follow at The Reality Rundown for all the latest headlines.